is Good Friday. Today is a very important day, ladies and gentlemen, not in just the lives of the world's 1 billion-plus Christians. It is an important day for everybody on the planet, because on this day, over 2,000 years ago, history was changed. Now, the reason I say that this day is important for everybody, irrespective of what religion they may be. They may be a Christian, they may be a Muslim, they may be a Jew, they may be a Hindu, a Buddhist, they may be an atheist. But the fact of the matter is that the events of that day have shaped the events of the last 2,000 years, and virtually every person on the planet right now is affected by that, because we find ourselves at war in the Middle East as a result of what took place on that day, 33 A.D. It was a day of hardcore politics, ladies and gentlemen. This is a fact, unfortunately, that has been missed or forgotten. I don't know if it's been forgotten. I don't know if it's been missed. I'm still at that tender age of 40, and so I don't know what Christianity used to be like long before I was born. I know that there have been some major changes that have taken place in the Christian world, particularly within the last 60 years, ever since Zionism first made its first big imprint on world events. So I don't know what Christianity used to be like before that. So I can't say whether or not Christians of whatever denomination understood the political importance of what took place on that day in 33 A.D. when Jesus of Nazareth was condemned to death and crucified. But that is going to be the subject for tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen. And with me tonight, I have two excellent guests who are going to help me out with this. Two men I consider to be godly individuals. Neither of them will be strangers to any of you, at least I hope not. The first is the Reverend Ted Pike of truthtellers.org. Ted has been a pioneer in the business of trying to warn Christians and really basically everybody, anybody with ears to hear, trying to warn them about the dangerous situation that the world is facing today as a result of this troublesome little nation on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean calling itself Israel. And the other person that we have on with us tonight, one of my closest friends, Mark Dankoff, also a pastor, as Ted Pike is. Mark, of course, had his own radio program here on the Republic Broadcasting Network for quite a while, and we are going to be working on getting Mark back up here again, because he's been on hiatus for long, way too long, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, I hear that music playing, which means we're going to our first break. So everybody stay tuned. I think we've got some important things to discuss here tonight, and we will jump into this pretty soon. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. It is Good Friday, 2008. It really doesn't matter what the date is, ladies and gentlemen, because today we commemorate the day that Jesus of Nazareth was put to death on the cross. And as I said in the opening minutes of the show before, this date is of particular significance to the events that are taking place today. We find ourselves not only at war in the Middle East, but literally at war with 1.5 billion people around the world, and on the brink of nuclear Armageddon as a result of the events that took place on this day in 33 A.D. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I asked to come on the program with me tonight two very good friends of mine. First is the Reverend Ted Pike of truthtellers.org, and the other is my very good friend Mark Dankoff, also a Lutheran pastor. And I'll be honest, ladies and gentlemen, the reason that I asked these two good gentlemen to come on with me tonight, in addition to the fact that they are good, what I consider to be good, godly men, you know, when Mike asked me to do the program tonight, I was thinking about what I would do. And, you know, around our home, Good Friday is always a very solemn, a very sober, and a very silent day. We have a general rule that we do not speak, particularly between the hours of 12 and 3, where we commemorate the 3 hours that Jesus hung on the cross. But as I was thinking about what I would do tonight in the midst of this very serious and somber mood, I decided that what we would do is to read the Passion, which is read in most churches, in most Christian churches, on Palm Sunday, which was just last Sunday. And the reason that I asked these two gentlemen to come on with me is because, to be honest, ladies and gentlemen, I have a very difficult time getting through the Passion. You know, we read it at home just so that our children understand the gravity of what Jesus had to go through. And, of course, being the head of the house, I'm the one tasked with reading it. And I have a very difficult time getting through it because it is such a tragic story. Now, you will not hear about this or this aspect of being a tragic story from most what we would call Christian evangelical leaders today. They're too busy hollering up and jumping up and down, talking about how great it is that Jesus died for our sins and all the rest of that. They don't get into much of the real suffering and the political intrigue that took place, the treachery, the backstabbing, the false witness, the bribing, the blackmailing, all of these things that took place in order so that Jesus, the hated enemy of the Pharisees, so that he could be put to death. So I will be right up front, I will be honest with you in telling you that the reason that I have asked these two gentlemen to come on and to help me read this is because I have, I have a very difficult time maintaining my composure as I read this because I find it to be a very sad and a very tragic story. And with that in mind, Ted, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, Mark.
It is my honor. Believe me, I wouldn't be doing this tonight or doing anything that I do if it weren't for you, Ted. Really, your work, your books and your videotapes, really, along with Mike Piper's work, these were the things that opened my eyes as to what was really going on in the world. And so I find it perfectly fitting then and proper that you be here tonight with me. And I hope that we have my other good friend on the line as well, Mark Dankoff. Are you with us?
I'm here, Mark. Good to be in conversation with you once more.
Yes, yes. Well, fellas, I set the stage for this thing, and both of you had a lot of experience on the radio. It'll probably take us a good 10 to 15 minutes to get through this. And so if you find yourselves reading a particular passage of the Passion and you hear the music coming up, I think you'll know how to gracefully land this aircraft. So with that in mind, ladies and gentlemen, I would ask that we have your attention for just a few minutes as we recount what I consider to be the most important news story of the last 2,000 years.
Yes.
And then it came at that time that Jesus with his apostles went to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go there and pray." He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and severely troubled. And then he said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. Stay here and watch with me." He went forward a little, fell on his face, and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass away from me. Nevertheless, not what I desire, but what you desire." He came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "What, could you not watch even 1 hour with me? Watch and pray that you do not fall into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Again, a second time, Jesus went away and prayed, saying, "Father, if this cup cannot pass from me unless I drink of it, your desire be done." He came again and found his disciples sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy. He left them again, went away, and prayed a third time, saying the same words. Then he came to his disciples and said to them, "Sleep now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Arise, let us be going. Behold, he who betrays me is at hand."
While he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came with him a great multitude with swords and clubs from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he who betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, whoever I kiss, he is the one. Seize him. Immediately he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Rabbi, and kissed him. Jesus said to him, Friend, why are you here? Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him. Behold, one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and struck off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, Put your sword back into its place, for all those who take the sword will die by the sword. Or do you think that I couldn't ask my Father, and he would even now send me more than 12 legions of angels? How then would the scriptures be fulfilled that it must be so? In that hour Jesus said to the multitudes, Have you come out against a robber with swords and clubs to seize me? I sat daily in the temple teaching, and you didn't arrest me. But all this has happened that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples left him and fled.
Those who had taken Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were gathered together. But Peter followed him from a distance to the court of the high priest and entered in and sat with the officers to see the end. Now the chief priests, the elders, and the whole council sought false testimony against Jesus that they might put him to death. And they found none. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. But at last two false witnesses came forward and said, This man said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. The high priest stood up and said to him, Have you no answer? What is this that these testify against you? But Jesus held his peace. The high priest answered him, I assure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus said to him, You have said it. Nevertheless, I tell you, after this you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of the sky. Then the high priest tore his clothing, saying, He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Behold, now you have heard his blasphemy. What do you think? And they answered, He is worthy of death. Then they spit in his face and beat him with their fists, and some slapped him, saying, Prophesy to us, you Christ, who hit you?
Now Peter was sitting outside in the court, and a maid came to him, saying, You are also with Jesus, the Galilean. But Peter denied it before all of them, saying, I don't know what you are talking about. When he had gone out onto the porch, someone else saw him and said to those who were there, This man also was with Jesus of Nazareth. Again, Peter denied it with an oath, saying, I don't know the man. After a little while, those who stood by came and said to Peter, Surely you are also one of them, for your speech makes you known. And at that time, Peter began to curse and to swear, saying, I don't know the man. Immediately the rooster crowed. Peter remembered the words which Jesus had said to him, quote, Before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. Peter went out and wept bitterly. Now when morning had come, all of the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And they bound him and led him away and delivered him up to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Then Judas, who betrayed Jesus, when he saw that Jesus had been condemned, felt remorse and brought back the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed innocent blood. But they said to him, What is it to us? You see to it. Judas threw down the pieces of silver in the sanctuary and departed. He went away and hanged himself. The chief priest took the pieces of silver and said, It is not lawful to put them into the treasury, since it is the price of blood. They took counsel and bought the potter's field with them to bury strangers in it. Therefore, that field was called the field of blood to this day. Then that which was spoken through the Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled, saying, They took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him upon whom a price had been set, whom some of the children of Israel priced, and they gave them for the potter's field, as the Lord commanded me.
Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus said to him, So you say. When he was accused by the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then Pilate said to him, Don't you hear many things that testify against you? And I'll continue.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark Glenn, Cub reporter with American Free Press, sitting in for the one and only Michael Collins Piper, who is away on secret official business. Even I couldn't tell you. If I told you, I'd have to kill you, and we wouldn't want that to happen. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing something a little bit different, in case you're just joining us now. I have with me two very good friends, two very good men, the Reverend Ted Pike and my good friend Mark Dankoff, and we are recounting the passion of Jesus, meaning everything that he went through with his crucifixion, his sham trial, the political hit that basically changed the history of the last 2,000 years. And we are, as I said, we are reading the passion, and before we went to the break, Ted, you were right in the middle of something very important, so why don't you pick up where you left off?
Yes. Then Pilate said to him, Don't you hear how many things they testify against you? He gave him no answer, not even one word, so that the governor marveled greatly. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release to the multitude one prisoner, whom they desired. They had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. When therefore they were gathered together, Pilate said to them, Whom do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ? For he knew that because of envy they had delivered him up. While he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. Now the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitudes to ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. But the governor answered them, Which of the two do you want me to release to you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate said to them, What then shall I do to Jesus, who is called Christ? They all said to him, Let him be crucified. But the governor said, Why? What evil has he done? But they cried out exceedingly, saying, Let him be crucified. So when Pilate saw that nothing was being gained, but rather that a disturbance was starting, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this righteous person. You see to it. All the people answered, May his blood be on us and on our children. Then he released to them Barabbas, but Jesus he flogged and delivered to be crucified.
Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole garrison together against him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him. They braided a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and a reed in his right hand. And they kneeled down before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews! They spat on him, and took the reed and struck him on the head. When they had mocked him, they took the robe off of him, and put his clothes on him, and led him away to crucify him. As they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name, and they compelled him to go with them, that he might carry his cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, that is to say, quote-unquote, the place of a skull. They gave him sour wine to drink mixed with gall. When he had tasted it, he would not drink. And when they had crucified him, they divided his clothing among them, casting lots, and they sat and watched him there. They set up over his head the accusation against him written, This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Then there were two robbers crucified with him, one on his right hand and one on the left. Those who passed by blasphemed him, wagging their heads and saying, You who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross. Likewise, the chief priests also mocking with the scribes, the Pharisees, and the elders said, He saved others, but he can't save himself. If he is the King of Israel, let him come down from the cross now, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God, let God deliver him now, if he wants him, for he said, I am the Son of God. The robbers also who were crucified with him cast on him the same reproach.
45 seconds. Well, Ted, you think you can read real slow?
Yes, I certainly can.
Okay.
Now, from the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," that is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Some of them who stood there when they heard it said, "This man is calling Elijah." Immediately one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him a drink. The rest said, "Let him be. Let's see whether Elijah comes to save him." Jesus cried again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark Glenn filling in for the one and only Michael Collins Piper. And with me tonight on this Good Friday are my good friends Mark Dankoff and the Reverend Ted Pike. And we are reading The Passion of the Christ, ladies and gentlemen, the story of Jesus' sham trial, his assassination, is the way that I put it, because he was assassinated. He was killed because he believed in the rights to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. He was killed because he chose to exercise freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion. His enemies, the Jewish leadership at that time, would have nothing of it. And for that reason, I thought that it was appropriate for us to read this story and try to bring it full circle in terms of what we are dealing with today, ladies and gentlemen, because we're dealing with the same beast that did this to this innocent man 2,000 years ago. We are wrestling with the same beast today. Ted, if you would, pick up where you left off.
"Behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from the top to the bottom. The earth quaked and the rocks were split. The tombs were opened and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised, and coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered into the holy city and appeared to many. Now the centurion and those who were with him watching Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and the things that were done, feared exceedingly, saying, 'Truly this was the Son of God.' Many women were there watching from afar, who had followed Jesus from Galilee, serving him. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. When evening had come, a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who himself was also Jesus' disciples, came. Then this man went to Pilate and asked for Jesus' body. Then Pilate commanded the body to be given up. Joseph took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had cut out of the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the door of the tomb and departed."
That, ladies and gentlemen, is, in my opinion, the most important news story of the last 2,000 years. That is the reason that we find ourselves in the situation that we're in today, where literally all life on earth stands a very good chance of being wiped out in an instant. What we are facing today, ladies and gentlemen, is a continuation of the events that took place on Good Friday in 33 A.D. when a gang of corrupt Jewish supremacist leaders, what I would call the founding fathers of the modern Zionist movement, tried to stamp out a revolution that had taken place 3 years earlier when a man from the northern region known as Galilee came forth and announced that he had come to bring freedom and liberation to the oppressed. This battle has been going on for 2,000 years, although for the most part it has been something that has been very subliminal and subterranean, but now it is in our faces literally every minute of every day. Now, Ted, I'd like to be able to claim credit for that theory, but I can't, because it really was your book, Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, that made me aware of this. You know, I, even having gone through 10 years of Catholic school and having been something of a semi-serious person in terms of my faith, I had never really sat down and read the Gospels and read about the contest, the war of ideas that had existed between Jesus and the Jewish leadership. So I have to give you credit for that. This is something that I guess people, you know, they're so skittish about being around religion these days, that they fail to see the political dimension to this story.
Yes.
Why don't you elaborate on that a little bit, if you could?
Well, the problem today, especially with the Jewish elite in control of the medias of communication, particularly in the Western Hemisphere, is that people get caught up in the back and forth of what's happening in Israel today. You know, Hamas sent over rockets today, and the Israel Apache helicopters went over the following day, and back and forth, back and forth. And what they don't see is the really big picture. And the scriptures provide that for us. They say basically that Jesus Christ was not just a political reformer. He was not just a religious reformer. He was not just a civil rights activist or a defender of the oppressed and so on. He was literally the God of Israel. He was the great husband and lover of Israel who had taken Israel, as it recounts in Ezekiel 16. He lifted her in her filth out of the garbage dump of antiquity. He had taken her and he had washed her as a miserable, off-scoured baby, and taken her and cleansed her and clothed her and made her his spiritual wife among the nations. Now, this is an extremely unique and great opportunity to become the spiritual bride of God. The Jewish people, the Hebrew nation, was chosen among the nations to have this unique honor of becoming God's spiritual bride, Jesus Christ's spiritual bride, the bride of the Creator, not only of the universe, but of the world and of human life and of the nation of Israel. And Scripture tells us that tragically, the Hebrews, the Jews, turned their backs on their true lover, their true husband, Jesus. They became apostate. In fact, they became spiritual harlots among the nations. And in no less than 83 instances in the Old Testament, I know I've counted and read them all, Israel is described as a whore, a harlot, a lewd woman, and so on. And you see, she is the principle of spiritual harlotry among the nations. It's true, there have been great apostate systems and still are in the world who have been spiritual harlots, but Israel, when she apostatized and rebelled and became a spiritual prostitute, she became the mother of the principle of spiritual whoredom to God. Now, was that epithet taken away from her after she crucified Jesus Christ, as we have read here today? Did somehow she become more wholesome or more redeemed or whatever, or blessed and favored by God? Oh, no, it has to be exactly the opposite. She had to have gone into even deeper apostasy and harlotry as a result of that. Now, if we fast forward 2,000 years, we find these very Jews, unrepentant of what they did in this account we just read, saying and teaching the evangelicals of the world that it's time now, considering the magnitude of Jewish sufferings, for the Jews all to go back to Palestine and inhabit God's holy land, even though they are all in rejection of Jesus Christ, without an ounce of remorse for what they did 2,000 years ago. And yet they were able to sell that heresy, that spiritual lawlessness, to the evangelical church
40 million evangelicals believe now that this has all been wiped away, that somehow Israel is no longer the spiritual harlot of the Bible and Revelation, but now God showers his blessings on Israel. He causes their citrus groves to bloom and blossom and provide fruit for the whole Middle East. He wins their wars for them, coming down at auspicious times and giving them victories over the Arabs, and on and on and on. Israel can do no wrong. You see, what you're saying is that back 2,000 years ago, the Jews came to a fork in the road. Were they going to follow the spiritual leadership of Jesus Christ, their true lover, their God, their Messiah, spiritual husband, or were they going to put all of their confidence in the leadership of those very Pharisees who crucified him? Tragically, the Jewish people decided to follow the Pharisees. They threw in their lot with the Pharisees, and for the last 2,000 years, they have followed the Pharisees and their anti-Bible, the Babylonian Talmud, and they have been led into absolutely abysmal darkness and spiritual confusion and spiritual coldness and desolation as a result of taking that false fork in the road. And so here we are in the 21st century, now reaping the reward of this misguided, lawless occupation of Palestine, which began about 100 years ago with the blessing of American evangelicals. And because that return to Palestine was spiritually lawless, you see, back in the Old Testament, God said again and again and again, he said, unless you Jews obey me and do righteousness and justice and mercy, especially to the inhabitants of the land and the strangers in the land, which means the Palestinians, you're not coming back into this holy land. And if you try to, I'm going to throw you out and you're going to stay in exile until you give me the kind of obedience which Joshua and Caleb and Ezra and Nehemiah gave him, you see. And yet today, the whole evangelical church has been sold this bill of goods that obedience no longer matters. Now, what's happened in the Middle East today is so spiritually lawless, so spiritually discordant to the will of God, that it can't help but produce nothing but discord and strife and terrorism and irreconcilable differences, frustrating attempts at a resolution by even the most skilled attempts at peacemaking in the Middle East. So, again, what you said is that 2,000 years ago, there on that rocky slope of Golgotha, tremendous events were set in motion, which have accrued and culminated now in a major world problem in the Middle East, which unless we are able to get back to biblical ethics and biblical teaching, biblical truth, is only going to get worse and worse.
Mark Dankoff.
Well, the way Ted has summed it up, I could hardly do any better, Mark. And I think as we look at this whole situation, it's abundantly clear that we are supporting a false Israel in the Middle East. This is not the Israel of God. We've seen all of the attendant consequences of this since 1948, leading up to what I think is going to be an incredible disaster in that part of the world after the American presidential elections, because most of us see pretty clearly that the next aspect of this in terms of Middle Eastern policy is going to be an American attack on Iran as a surrogate military force for the Zionist state of Israel. But even aside from that, I think Pastor Pike has referred to something else that is well worth underscoring, Mark, and you've said this to me time and time again in private conversations that we've had, and that is that if the Zionist state of Israel ended tomorrow, it would not be the end of this larger problem going all the way back to the conspiracy that was launched against Jesus that we read from the scriptures tonight. We need to ask ourselves in terms of the American church and the American culture, who has been largely the political, financial, and logistical supporter of most of the evil that we have seen developing in our land in our lifetimes. The abortion industry, the homosexual rights movement, the Hollywood industry, the worst aspects of it. We could simply go on and on with these things, and both Ted Pike and Mark Glenn and Michael Collins Piper and Chuck Carlson of We Hold These Truths, you guys for years and years have been pointing out that it is the same constituency that largely has financed and supported logistically the takeover of American culture, the rejection of biblical theism, the rejection of moral traditionalism, and the onset of a moral degeneracy that has been coupled with a move toward a world government. And that in conjunction with the atrocious foreign policy that we've been supporting vis-a-vis the Palestinians in the last 60 years has us on the edge of a precipice. And like you guys, and like many of our listeners, I'm absolutely struck by the bitter irony of the fact that people like John Hagee of Cornerstone Church here in San Antonio insist that it is a biblical mandate from God that we support the very people who have brought abortion to our land, that we support the very people who have homosexualized our culture, that we support the very people largely responsible for the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia less than 100 years ago. And for all of these millions and millions of Protestant evangelicals to be supporting this sort of nonsense, I think goes a long way toward locating the center of the great deception that Jesus said would come upon the world before his second coming.
Yes, I agree with you. You know, I don't try to pretend to be a prophet or a soothsayer, but, you know, I have a hard time not seeing the parallels between Jesus' warnings about the end times and the fact that false prophets would arise and that there would be this falling away, that there would be this great deception that would... And Jesus said that the deception would be so powerful that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. And so, you know, that's the amazing thing, is that you try to have a conversation like this with any of these people who are under this magic spell that has been cast upon them by the people like Hagee and Parsley and some of these other guys, and they don't want to hear about it. You see, to them, the rapture's coming, and they're going to get taken up into heaven, and it won't happen if we mess it up by complaining about this unbiblical occupation of the Holy Land. Don't do anything to mess it up, you know, for them. So with that in mind, you know, it's like you hear about these very unstable people, and some slick shyster comes into town and talks them into investing all of their life savings into a pyramid scheme that is going to make them millionaires within a week. And, you know, and somebody comes along and says, wait a minute, did you check this guy out? You know, he if it sounds too good to be true, it probably isn't. And so, but yet you have the bulk of the Christians in this country and in other parts of the world that are completely under the spell, and they sit by and allow this. You see, it is my position that, you know, when the Jews were driven out of the Holy Land, when their temple was destroyed in 70 AD, this was not just a judgment upon them for their disobedience. This was also a blessing upon the rest of the world, because they were scattered and they were dispersed, and as a result of that, they were unable to achieve what they have been able to achieve today by their cohesiveness, you see.
Yeah.
So we in the what we call the Christian West, we are inheriting the bitter fruits that we have planted ourselves by bringing back into existence this beast that was destroyed 2,000 years ago.
Well, the fundamental problem in the 20th century, I believe, is that there is a very widespread feeling among evangelicals that obedience no longer matters to God. And certainly if there's one thing that God tried to hammer into the Hebrews 3,500 years ago, was that obedience was everything.
Okay, and we do have a few calls, and I don't want to have them leave empty-handed. But before I do, as I said, I wanted to thank both of you to come on. I consider it a great honor that I was able to spend an hour of this Good Friday with men as good as you.